Chapter 43. Pluto. That was more like it. Chet's reaction to her grim, way better than Asher's. Strange as it was, in just a few days, Pluto felt more for Chet than she ever did Asher. He said Romeo would have died for the girl anyway, even if he knew from the start their love was doomed. Is that what made Shakespeare's play so timeless? Was the writer onto something when his star-crossed lovers both ended up dead? And was Pluto bringing Chet down with her? She didn't exactly lie to him when she said she wasn't dying in a week. It was less than that. She was down to days now. But she did feel badly hinting they had more time than the star-crossed lovers. Then again, it was all business for Chet. He hadn't touched her and barely even looked at her since they'd turned on to the 138, his arms as stiff and secure as a couple of table legs, and he seemed almost relieved when she brought up their deal of last night. Friends. But at least he was talking to her again. "When's your birthday?" Chet asked, cars passed right and left. "No," said Pluto, "and please speed up." "That's not an answer." Chet upped it to 65, which was sadly an improvement, and then mumbled the words, "precious cargo." "It is an answer," said Pluto. "No is a perfectly acceptable answer." "Not for that question. Pluto." "I was 8 when my mom died," she said. "I hadn't used a car seat for at least 2 years, and my father put me back in a booster until I was 12. No lie. I was short for my age, but 12. I never got to play sports. I used to love going for runs, but that stopped hard when my dad insisted it was too cold out. What really frightened him, of course, was letting me loose on the streets. I finally convinced him to buy a treadmill, but even that he didn't want." "Very few deaths by treadmill these days," Chet said. "You'd be surprised." Pluto didn't let on it bothered her, having to use the treadmill. She just started using it. She never let on about any of it. "When I went to the park," she said, "I was in no way allowed to hang upside down from the monkey bars, or climb too high, or spin too fast. The fence went back up around the pool until I had properly trained with a professional swim instructor, lest I slip and fall off the edge of the earth into the ocean, which is another thing. I haven't seen the coast in a decade, and I'm a pretty good swimmer now." "I could tell, back at the lake," said Chet. "Your parents must think you're a moron. I mean, sorry, your dad." "My dad was trying to be careful." Pluto nodded at the speedometer. Chet had dropped back to 50. "I climbed a tree once," she said. "The horror. You would think, seeing my dad's face when he came to get me. I was staying with my Grandpa Great for the weekend." "A great, Grandpa?" Pluto nodded. "Only one great left. He encouraged me to climb, and I trusted him. This wise old owl who has no sense at all. Apparently it's what people said about him. I like him already." Chet leveled off at an even 58 miles per hour and asked, "Do you mean all sports were out, really? What about swim meets? You're in your own lane. What could happen?" "That's the worst part," said Pluto, imagining all that could happen. "I never really fought it because I was scared too. And then I turned 17 and figured I'm dying soon anyway, so..." "Why not catch the next shuttle into space?" Chet finished for her. "Exactly. I feel like I've only ever lived in my own backyard. A 600-mile backyard was new for me." "I get it," he said. He did get it. She loved that he'd got it. Pluto had the sudden driving urge to scoot into the middle seat, lift Chet's hand off the wheel and drape it over her shoulder like a blanket, make him fit her into the crook of his arm. If she was right, and Pluto's mother really had sent a sign from the universe about this last amazing race to space, it was highly possible she meant for this to be a part of it. Was it written in the stars that her only daughter fall in love before she died? But just because Pluto's mother wanted one thing didn't mean Chet's mother wanted the same. For Chet, wasn't every girl just a ticking time bomb? Pluto kept her hands to herself. A minute later, Chet said, "Don't you have a horse named Macaroon?" He thought it odd that he knew the horse but had never heard her mother speak Pluto's name. He explained how her mom would come see him at the park. He didn't say why. It wasn't difficult to figure why. "I'm glad she knew you," said Pluto. "Me too. She's the only person I ever cared for who didn't get that look in her eyes." "The only person?" said Pluto. "It'll come." "Show me the look," she said. He crossed his eyes at her. "That's not so bad." She laughed, again wanting to lean into him, but what would be the point of leaning into him? She hadn't thought of Macaroon in years. Thinking about her now brought back the painful memory at the ripe old age of 10 of having given her away. Hardest thing she'd ever done. Pluto absent-mindedly rubbed the indent in the seat between them, and it occurred to her that Chet had his own animal story. The indent would have been just the right size for Tail, who only hated him because he loved her first. Chet glanced over. You said she was a major force in the Friends of Eli, your mom. It's hard to believe, considering. Yeah, since before I was born. Mom was a renegade. My dad didn't know that I knew. Nobody was supposed to know. It would have ruined Grandpa's campaign. But your dad is such a... Go ahead. I know you're not going to swear. He's a complete Aston. Except he's not an Aston, Pluto said. He's just scared. He doesn't trust anyone. Chet had a disbelieving look in his eyes when he glanced at her, but the look softened and he regarded her briefly with kindness. What would your dad have done if he saw you on top of Angel's Landing? If you asked me, would I rather eat 100 toad's eyeballs with ketchup or tell my dad I hiked Angel's Landing? I'd take the eyeballs. I'd take 1,000 of them. Well, yeah, Chet said, but with ketchup, I mean, all you'd taste is the ketchup. I'd order that off a menu. Pluto's laughter transitioned them into a comfortable, long stretch of quiet. She looked out the window. Scrub-filled plains made way to tree-dotted hillsides, interrupted by an occasional rock formation or a lonely but massive metal-roofed house. She could see snow on the tips of the most distant mountains. The landscape transformed while they made their windy ascent up into those very mountains. Pluto borrowed Chet's phone to take video. The window chilled as the temperature dropped, and then it was all white rock and green ponderosa pine as they left the desert floor below. It was so beautiful. Pluto would spend a year there if she could. Truly, she'd never wanted to live more badly than she did at that moment. The realization was so severe she willed herself immediately to stop thinking of it. No amount of crying was going to change the outcome. Her father taught her that at a young age, before either of them knew they had any reason to cry. And Pluto wondered, not for the first time, what he'd had to battle all those years. She never knew her father's grim. Pluto turned the video on Chet, who raised and then wiggled his brows at her before shifting focus quickly back to the road, grave and almost glaring. She felt as if she'd caught a snapshot of his real self before he realized his truth was showing, and he hid away again. An ounce of real, gallon of fake. He'd probably been living his entire life that way. She watched him as they drove. Out of the corner of her eye, she watched him all the way up until they slowed before the entrance to yet another national park, when Pluto decided that his wasn't the only truth showing. Because the truth was, her grim couldn't be helped, but they might beat his. Pluto could very well love Chet before time ran out, as long as he didn't love her first.